we're back. Hour two of the Harry Brown Show. As you could probably tell if you're a regular listener to the show, I am not Harry Brown. I am Jim Babka, co-hosting tonight with Harry. How you doing tonight, Harry?
I'm just doing fine. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to have you with me, Jim. It's always a pleasure when we get a chance to talk on any subject, and when we go out over the air, we're going to let people have part of your wisdom.
1-800-259-9231. I'm not sure how much wisdom I have this late at night, but 1-800-259-9231. Perhaps you have some wisdom you'd like to offer us, or you can email us if you are a little bit shy at comments@downsizedc.org. That's comments@downsizedc.org. Now, the first hour we devoted almost exclusively to the Patriot Act, and you know, just a reminder to go to downsizedc.org. This is our best chance to stop the Patriot Act. But we're going to get into some other subjects this hour. You can call about the Patriot Act if you want, but we want to talk about the war on terror. The war on terror. Now, there's an article that's come up here that has really sparked Harry's attention and some interesting analysis that's going to come out of it. And here's really the big mega question, Harry. Is George Bush leading us in a fight that we could properly call the war on terrorism?
No. There is no such thing. Recently, Charlie Reese wrote an article on LouRockwell.com, and I know Jim, I speak for Jim as well, that the two of us are big fans of LouRockwell.com. Every day you get about 8 to 10 articles on a menu. If you're really interested in these subjects, you're going to find 4 or 5 that you want to read and probably 1 or 2 that you're going to want to keep for some reason. And a couple of weeks ago, Charlie Reese, who's a regular on LouRockwell.com and has his own column that's syndicated, Charlie Reese wrote a wonderful article. And ever since the war on terrorism began, I have been suspicious of this whole concept of a war on terrorism. What happens when a bunch of gangs or a drug gang terrorizes the people in a neighborhood in some urban district in the United States? Is that part of the war on terrorism? Are we going to do away with all of that, too? What is terrorism? Terrorism is the generally defined as the brutalizing of innocent people in order to make somebody change a policy. And that's certainly what the United States has done in a number of countries in the world, including Iraq right now, by devastating Fallujah in order to teach a lesson to the terrorists. Well, the terrorists apparently didn't get the lesson. Well, in a recent speech, this is what Reese has to talk about. Dick Cheney, whom he calls the misleader-in-chief prior to the war in Iraq, he chastised people for suggesting that he made yet another whopper of a misleading statement. And he said, those who advocate a sudden withdrawal from Iraq should answer a few simple questions, such as whether the United States would be better off or worse off with terror leaders like Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, Osama bin Laden, or Ayman al-Zawahiri in control of Iraq. In other words, if the United States were to withdraw from Iraq and leave it to the hands of one of these three terrorists, would Iraq be better off? Would the United States be better off? And so on. Now, he goes on to say that these people are nothing. Zarqawi is a miserable little terrorist with a small band of fanatical followers and a lifespan that is shrinking by the day. To suggest that there was even a remote possibility of him taking control of Iraq is, well, grossly misleading. Zarqawi is a Jordanian, not an Iraqi. He has been denounced by his tribe and his family, and he has killed more Iraqis than Americans. It's just a matter of time before some Iraqi drops a dime on him and he's packed off to Islamic hell. And Reese goes on to say, as for bin Laden and the Egyptian and his Egyptian advisor, they are, assuming they're still alive, hiding out in some cave or rat-infested village in the mountains between Afghanistan and Pakistan. They could not control a small town, much less a country of 25 million people, of which neither of them is a native. I don't know who the vice president's speechwriters are, but he ought to fire them all forthwith. What he said was so far off the map of reality that it's embarrassing. He might as well have said that if Americans withdraw, Martians will land in spaceships and take over the country. His statement is that bizarre. If he himself believes what he said, then he has displayed an ignorance of the Middle East that is embarrassingly gargantuan. A 12-year-old street vendor in Baghdad could tell you that those three men have zero chance of ruling Iraq. And he goes on there to say one likes to believe that the leader of one's countries are the minimum sane, no matter how flawed their policies might be. And finally, he wraps up by saying the Iraqis are dependent for security and stability, and once they have the power, I'm sorry, the Iraqis are desperate for security and stability, and once they have the power, woe be to anyone who challenges them on those points. The Bush administration, in order to maintain a never-ending war, has greatly exaggerated the power and influence of terrorists. From the way Cheney is acting and talking, he seems to be taken in by his own propaganda. But just keep in mind that no terrorist has an army. No terrorist controls a country or even a city. Terrorists are nothing more than criminal gangs scattered about and perpetually on the run. When they occasionally draw blood, it is usually at the cost of their own lives. However magnified they might be in Cheney's murky mind, they are in reality losers, doomed to die for lost causes.
You know, Harry, you have a phrase that you used during the campaigns where you talked about domestic issues, and you said the government is only basically good at one thing, and that is they break your legs and then hand you a pair of crutches and say, see, without us you wouldn't be able to walk. And as I'm listening to you share this information with the audience here, I'm thinking that the same thing applies to foreign policy. If it wasn't for the fact that we toppled Saddam Hussein in the first place, there are al-Zarqawi and any of the other terrorist cells that are operating in Iraq would not be an issue right now. Saddam Hussein and these guys were mortal enemies.
Yes, of course. And Saddam Hussein and his allies were not enemies of us. So the enemy has been created and now it has to be knocked down. And the enemy is far, far more diverse and more scattered and more dangerous than Saddam Hussein ever was. In fact, Saddam Hussein wasn't dangerous at all to the United States. And as probably 90% of the listeners to this broadcast know, Saddam Hussein was an ally of the United States in the 1980s, the U.S. Sheltered him and gave him weapons to fight against Iran in the Iraqi-Iran war. And there's the perfect example of breaking the legs, is creating a big enemy in Saddam Hussein, and now we have to fight him. So we fought him for 2 years and got rid of Saddam Hussein, and for some reason that doesn't seem to make Iraq safe. Secure ally of the United States, we are now faced with this desperate cleanup job. And after we come back from the next break, I want to get into just how many enemies the United States has created over there and how it has botched up the job completely of setting up a stable Iraq and a secure Iraq. This really is the typical example of how government breaks your legs and then hands you a crutch. You couldn't find a better example in foreign policy. Well, I guess you could. There are plenty of examples. So
folks,
anyway, go ahead, Jim.
Folks, we've made a very bold claim here that the war on terror is a fiction, and I'm sure there may be some people out there that disagree with that. We encourage you to call at 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. Or if you're a little shy, comments, that's comments plural, at downsizedc.org. That's comments at downsizedc.org. If you have a question or comment, you want to contribute to this discussion, when we get back from the break, we're going to get into the technical details. Harry's going to back up the case for why there is no real war on terror. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
You're an adult, right? You're old enough to vote.
You've got a job and a car. Maybe you have a family and own a home. So why do the politicians treat you like a child?
At DownsizedDC.com, we believe you should be free to make your own decisions.
About your health care, your retirement, your children's education. At DownsizedDC.com, we don't trust the politicians. We believe in you.
We believe if you had the chance, you'd slash federal spending, put an end to government waste and corruption, and dramatically reduce your taxes today.
In short, we believe you'd downsize D.C.
Year after year, the federal government expands, meddling in every area of your life.
Make your own decisions. Visit DownsizedDC.com. That's DownsizedDC.com.
You're listening to The Harry Brown Show on the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
That sensitive, emotive music brings us back to the Harry Brown Show. I'm tonight co-hosting with Harry Brown. My name is Jim Babka, president of DownsizedDC.org and the Downsized DC Foundation. And Harry Brown is with us tonight. How are you doing tonight, Harry?
I'm just fine, and we're talking some really hot topics tonight, and I'm glad we're getting into them at last.
Yes, we're doing the Patriot Act, but what we're really talking about right now, and I think, you know, should stir up some controversy and should encourage you to get on the phone at 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email us at comments@downsizedc.org. And that's comments plural. Sometimes I don't enunciate clearly enough. So it's comments@downsizedc.org. And we happen to have a question from Pierre in cyberspace. Harry, he writes, do either of you have information about the status of the Real ID Act, a.k.a. the National ID Card?
Yeah, you must know something about
that. Yes, we've fought this over at DownsizedDC.org. In fact, it's the hottest issue in our history, our young history. We're only about 17, 18 months old right now. But the Real ID Act passed back in May. In fact, it passed on May 10th in the Senate and was signed by the President of the United States the next day. And the Real ID Act is the law of the land. This is a piece of legislation that will standardize driver's license in all 50 states of these here United States and allow the federal government to begin setting those standards. What kind of things are going to be included? Types of identifiers, maybe even radio tags that we would have to carry around on us where they would be able to track us. But it's opening up a society or a day when you and I are going to have to be or will be stopped routinely at checkpoints and asked for our papers, please. And yes, it is the law of the land. Now, DownsizedDC.org on the 10th of every month does what we call a Real ID Grudge Day. And if you're subscribed to the Downsizer Dispatch, our email list, you get that message. And we send Congress a message letting them know we haven't forgotten and we want the Real ID Act repealed. This bill only passed in the first place because the Senate was rolled into a bill after they'd refused this bill three times. It was rolled into a bill that provided funding for troops in Iraq. And, of course, they were not going to vote against funding troops in Iraq because, after all, we're fighting a war on terror, right, Harry?
Yes, of course.
And which we're in the process of debunking tonight. So the bill passed. They complained, but the bill passed unanimously. Nobody stood up and had the courage to stop this bill. So they kind of snuck it in on us, but we're reminding them that we still want it repealed. And a lot of people really seem to care about this issue, Harry. Pierre goes on and he says, is it possible that if the Democrats win both a majority in both chambers of Congress on a strong anti-war platform, that we might see a return to some normalcy? Or is this just wishful thinking?
Well, first of all, I don't think that you're going to have a strong anti-war position. What you're going to have is something more aggressive than what Bush has promised. In other words, we want to see some action on getting the troops home and this, that, and the other thing. And that's how we're different from the Republicans. And I think the Democrats really have a chance to win the House and Senate simply on the disapproval of George Bush and the disapproval with the way the war is going without anybody really having any particulars or any specific idea of what should be done to make it better. And you're not going to see a specific program from the Democrats, at least not that I can see. But I think it's very, very possible that they'll win both houses. And if they do, we may just have gridlock on a lot of issues. And gridlock is always good. It's gooder than when the Republicans control all three branches of government. Well, yes, all three branches. Or the Democrats control all three branches of government. Because what you have then is a desire for one group to put the other group down and keep them from getting what they want. And that's a start in the right direction.
You know, Harry, I don't trust the Democrats one bit here. First of all, you know, during the election campaign last year, the criticism that John Kerry was actually leveling at George Bush, you know, talking out of both sides of his mouth, as the Bush administration constantly reminded us, was that they had not put enough troops in Iraq to do the job and to get home soon enough. So there are several Democratic plans floating around out there that have us committing more forces so we can get the job done quicker. So they want to escalate to lead to an exit, you know, kind of that perpetual war for perpetual peace idea. And then there just before Congress went to its Thanksgiving break, a lot of people don't realize this, Representative Murtha has made a lot of news lately. He's a Democrat hawk. Who has begun questioning, apparently he's very close with many of the generals, has begun questioning what's going on over there and saying that we need to have a withdrawal plan. Well, the Republicans decided to call the Democrats on this, and they proposed a simple one-sentence bill that said, the war's over, bring the troops home immediately. It got no Democrat votes. It got, I think, three, actually. I don't want to exaggerate. It got three Democrat votes.
Who proposed that?
The Republicans did.
Oh, the Republicans did.
Yes, they said, okay, Democrats, if this is what you want, let's put it up for a vote.
So it's like put up or shut up.
Put up or shut up, and they put out a one-sentence bill. Now, the Democrats whined and complained, Harry, because they said, well, this isn't what we were proposing. We were proposing a gradual withdrawal, and now the liberals are all over the news. John Lee Anderson, George Packer, Cy Hirsch, Rick Hertzberg, you know, they're all saying things like, well, we can't pick up our skirts and run, we can't bolt, we can't, you know, we can't have this immediate exit, it would leave things in chaos. They're not the idea that the Democrats have the courage to oppose this war is really a distant reality. And if someone could point me to someone who was a leader in that party that could help lead that party in that direction, I'm all ears. I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah, you're right. Incidentally, the war seems to creep into every one of these broadcasts week after week after week, and it may seem that I'm obsessed with war, and I am. Because war is the biggest, most brutal government program there is. And if we could do something, somehow, some way, to sidetrack this war, then we would be sidetracking big government. And it wouldn't put an end to Medicare. It wouldn't put an end to federal intrusions in education. It wouldn't put an end to a lot of things. But it would be a big, big step in the right direction of derailing the idea that government can do whatever it wants, and it certainly would do a lot to derail the idea that the President of the United States can do whatever he wants, can just march into any country and decide that he wants to overthrow the government of that country. So,
you know, Harry, that's another area that the Democrats have let us down. These resolutions allow them to later come back and criticize and even pretend they didn't say certain things. I was watching one of the Sunday morning talking head programs a couple weeks ago, and Jay Rockefeller was sitting there, you know, questioning the intelligence and saying how they were lied to. Well, he's on the Intelligence Committee. He was getting the briefings, and they had footage, video footage of him before the war in the well of the Senate giving a speech on behalf of going in and attacking Saddam Hussein if that's what it was going to take. And he was making claims that were stronger and bolder than what George Bush was making at the time when he was trying to lie us into the war. And here he is complaining. These men need to be put on record, and that's what a declaration of war is all about.
Well, there is one program that does that, and I'm going to mention it when we come back from the break. And we are going to take a break right now, a couple of minutes to hear from some sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion, because we haven't even gotten into yet the idea that there is no war on terrorism.
1-800-259-9231 or email us comments at downsizedc.org.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Why Government Doesn't Work, provides libertarian solutions to many of today's thorny political problems. How to make America much safer from foreign attack while reducing the military budget dramatically. How to end the Social Security program and free us from that oppressive tax without leaving senior citizens holding the bag. How to reduce crime while reducing government. How to end the income tax immediately and cut the federal budget by over 90%. How a libertarian president could reduce government even without a libertarian Congress. Why Government Doesn't Work is now available for downloading at libertyfree.com for only $9.75. Just $9.75 for Why Government Doesn't Work. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it from your easy chair. You can get Why Government Doesn't Work tonight at libertyfree.com.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Well, you're listening to the Harry Brown Show. You know, and I notice a pattern here, Harry. Now, this is, by the way, I'm Jim Babka, co-hosting tonight with Harry Brown. The music in the first hour is much more upbeat and marchy or waltzy, and in the second hour is much more somber and emotive. And you know, that piece right there is just a very moving piece.
Well, it is. It's a very restful piece. It's the Symphonic Sketches by George Wallingford Chadford, which is not going to do anybody any good to know. They'll never remember it by the time they get to Amazon. But that reminds me, I need to mention a couple of things. My computer is shot tonight, so I can't put up these articles on the Radio Links page, but I will do so the first of the week. There really are two main articles, and I really, really want to encourage you to follow the links. Both of them are from the LouRockwell.com website, and both of them are very, very important reading to understand what your government is doing to you. We don't have a war on terrorism. What we have is a war on straw men. Now, I don't mean to say that George Bush saw 9/11 and said, hey, this is an opportunity to increase government, to make government bigger, to pass all the dirty legislation that I could never get passed if I just presented it as it was. No, I don't mean to say that, but I mean to say that that is what it has become. It has been an opportunity for people in government to hang every ornament they want on the Christmas tree of terrorism. And the second article is one by Robert Dreyfus. And Robert Dreyfus points out that the Bush administration and administrations before it have been fooling around in Iraq for years and years. There are all sorts of elements, all sorts of organizations in Iraq. And the various administrations have taken the opportunity to fund some of them, to ally themselves with some of them in order to try to gain control of Iraq. Clinton wanted to overthrow Hussein. Bush wants to overthrow Hussein. But in both cases, they had elements in mind that they were going to support and make sure would be the leaders of the new Iraq. And Robert Dreyfus, in his article, uses the metaphor of the sorcerer's apprentice. Sorcerer's apprentice. Now, you know that story, I guess, especially if you saw Fantasia. The Mickey Mouse character had a naive and inexperienced use of magic. And when his leader, when his boss broke, went out of the room, he used the magic broom to sweep up the water, and what happened was the water flooded and overflowed, and he was dealing with something he had no ability to deal with. And that's what Robert Dreyfus says are the American efforts to play with the forces of political Islam. And they've proven to be dangerous, volatile, and often uncontrollable. And he says that this goes beyond the Shiites, which have now taken control of the country. In the Sunni parts of the country, the power of Islamism is growing too. And he says, by this I do not mean the forces associated with Al-Qaeda, but the radical right Muslim Brotherhood, represented there by the Iraqi Islamic Party, and other manifestations of the Salafi and Wahhabi-style religious right. In Egypt, Syria, and elsewhere, the radical religious right is also gaining strength. Meanwhile, sometimes deliberately, sometimes by sheer ignorance and incompetence, the Bush administration is encouraging the spread of political Islam. Were we to, quote, stay the course, unquote, not only Iraq, but much of the rest of the Middle East could fall to the Islamic right. Now, you could, if I may digress from the article, you could call the Shiites there the radical left, and the Bush administration is playing with the radical right. And Dreyfus goes on to say, does this mean that al-Qaeda-style fanatics will take power? No. Whether in the form of Iraq's Shiite theocrats or the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood in Syria and Egypt, the Islamic right cannot be compared to al-Qaeda. But just as the U.S. Christian right has its clinic bombers, just as the Israeli Jewish right spawned the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin and settler extremists who killed dozens at Muslim holy sites, the Islamic right provides ideological support and ideological justification for more extreme and even terrorist offspring. Even the Muslim Brotherhood, an organization with a long history of violence, which once maintained a covert secret apparatus and a paramilitary arm, has not convincingly renounced its past nor demonstrated that it sees democracy as anything more than a tool it can use to seize power. So what we're talking about here are a whole bunch of different organizations that are all trying to seize power, not just in Iraq, but in the Middle East, in Syria, in Israel, in Palestine, in Egypt. And even he goes on later to identify what he says is the dominant force within the Shiite majority, which is the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution, or SCIRI. Oh, it's in Iraq. The Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, or SCIRI. Now, let me ask you a question. When have you ever heard of the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq? I doubt that you've ever heard of it. And yet, this is one of the most powerful forces there in the Middle East, and you don't hear about it in the newspapers. You never hear George Bush mention his position on it, for or against. And it even has a parallel force associated with it called al-Dawi, the Islamic Call, which is a 45-year-old Shiite underground terrorist party.
No, you don't hear about that, Harry. You hear about Ahmad Shalabi all the time.
Yes, of course. And from the mid-1990s on, and especially after 2001, the United States provided overt and covert assistance to these organizations as part of the effort to force regime change in Iraq. Like Ahmad Shalabi's Iraqi National Congress, with which both worked closely and which had offices in Tehran, SCIRII, and Dawi were based in Iran. In other words, Iran has been the focal point, where the jumping-off point for all these different organizations. SCIRI, in fact, was founded in 1982 by Ayatollah Khomeini. Remember Ayatollah Khomeini? And also its paramilitary arm, the Badr Brigade, was trained and armed by Iran's Revolutionary Guards. Certainly to the Bush administration, SCIRI and Dawa were known quantities. Now, all we have here, of course, are just a bunch of organizations that are struggling, that all intend to be the eventual major force in Iraq. And we're going to have to deal with all of them. And yet you never hear of any of them. And you never hear George Bush discuss any of them, for or against. And I don't know what to say. We're going to have to deal with all of these. And when we come back from this break, we also want to take a look at where Egypt fits into all of this. Because George Bush has attached Egypt as the basis of democracy in the Middle East, that it's the anchor point for the new democracy that's going to sweep over the Middle East.
And history is about to repeat itself, too, because they're pushing to get into Syria. 1-800-259-9231. This is practically your last chance to get in. 1-800-259-9231, or email us at comments@downsizedc.org.
Currency devaluation, inflation, one and the same. If you had deposited $100,000 in a bank at 1% in a 30-month period dating from May 24, 2005, here is what happened to your funds. The dollar lost 33% of its value in that time frame. The bank paid you 1%. Your $100,000 now has a net purchasing power of $68,000. Here is reality. The devaluation of currency equals real inflation. Keep in mind how the value of your paper assets are measured in dollars. Gold in the same time frame increased 35% in value. Learn how to protect and profit in this truly unstable world economy. Call Midas Resources at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Well, let's get right back into it, because I know Harry Brown's got a lot to say to you here tonight. We've been talking about the whether or not there really is a war on terror. You know, Harry, you know, we worked together on a project called truthaboutwar.org, and at that site, which was frozen in time when the firing started, the shock and awe campaign in Iraq.
Before the U.S. invaded.
We froze the page, so it's still there for people to go and see after they get past the flash page. From the home page on, it's been frozen. We talked about this, and you know, it seems to me at the time it was fairly obvious to anybody who had any understanding of what the dynamics of Iraq were that this was going to be this situation was going to be a problem. You've got a country that's two-thirds basically Shia or Shiite, and then the remaining balance is split between the Sunnis and the Kurds. The Sunnis were actually the smallest group and potentially the most moderate. This idea that there was going to be a right-wing religious leadership emerging in the country seemed obvious at the time.
Yeah, and that the dominoes would fall. And most all of it has come to pass, just as so many people predicted, not just us, but we were fortunate in having a place where people could go and get a lot of good information and a lot of good insights. Because what the press was giving and what the politicians were saying and what the foreign leaders were acting on was 90% what the Bush administration was saying. And here was an opportunity to get insights and a bit of history. There are so many people out there who understand the history of Iraq, people like Eric Margolis or Robert Siegel or Charlie Reese, who have taken the trouble to understand the background of what was going on and to point out, you can't just walk in there. They're not going to throw flowers at you as you march down the main street of Baghdad. That's not the way it's going to work, because this has all happened before, and it didn't turn out this way, and it's not going to turn out this way this time. Well,
now, Harry, I understand now that these concerns now are starting to express. History is beginning to repeat itself. In Syria, the administration's beginning to see the influence of the Muslim Brotherhood there, and they're wanting to move in and begin to take action. And they've spared no expense, as I understand it. They have found a crack expert to lead us in that area, to represent our government and explain to us what's going on there. Who is this wonderful person that they've put in charge?
The person in charge, are you ready for this? Are
yes.
you listening? The person in charge of the Syrian operation is Elizabeth Cheney.
Who?
Elizabeth Cheney, the vice president's daughter. She is currently the principal deputy assistant secretary of state for Near East Affairs, charged with the task of democracy building in the greater Middle East.
Wow, I'm glad they found somebody competent to do this.
Right, and right now she's focused on Syria. And of course, they're all giving us the same bull that they gave with Iraq, that they're going to receive the benefits of U.S.-imposed democracy. And that this small, oil-poor, militarily weak state is at the moment feeling the full force of Bush administration pressure, as Robert Dreyfus puts it. Its army and security forces have been driven out of Lebanon at the risk of sparking civil war in that country again. It's been targeted by the Syrian Accountability Act, which is reminiscent of the 1998 Iraq Liberation Act, and hit with related U.S. economic sanctions.
History is repeating itself.
Yes, and there's, you know, it goes on, and I won't give you all of it because it's there for you to read. And again, I want to remind you that I'll put these links up on Monday or Tuesday, just as soon as I can get
well,
my...
Harry, should we trust them? One of the things that they're saying now is that the terrorism that is happening in Iraq, a lot of it's being sponsored out of Syria. They're coming into Syria, attacking, and going back to Syria.
Yes, of course. And of course, the U.S. is using that as a further excuse. Dreyfus calls this a formula for endless war in the Middle East, and that's a pretty darn good way of summing it all up. Iraq, and we have to understand, too, that they're making very strong overtures towards Egypt, because Egypt is not really a democracy. It's just holding some kind of straw man elections. But it's also threatened by all of these fundamentalist groups. Dreyfus says Iraq, Syria, and Egypt are not the only places threatened by fundamentalism. In recent Palestinian elections, Hamas, the official branch of the Muslim Brotherhood there, has shown remarkable strength, threatening to undo the Palestine Authority's accomplishments and wreck any chance of a Israeli accord, and on and on. And he sums it up by saying, from Israel and Palestine to Egypt, Syria, Iraq, and beyond, in Algeria, Sudan, the Gulf states, Pakistan, and even Saudi Arabia, the region is beset by Islamist movements. The right way to combat this upsurge is not through military action or a Bush administration-style global war on terrorism. That, as many observers have pointed out, is likely to further fuel the growth of such movements, not subdue them. And he's right. This is an endless thing, but that's a wonderful thing for any government, to have an endless war. You know, that famous book that was put together many, many years ago, called The Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. And that's what we have with the so-called global war on terrorism. It will never end, because it really is a global war on straw men.
You know, Harry, I really like how Charlie Reese put it. The Iraqis are desperate for security and stability, and once they have the power, woe to anyone who challenges them on those points. I think that argues for an immediate withdrawal. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to do the final segment tonight of the Harry Brown Show, so don't go away. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you? Violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, "Your Honor, I didn't know about this law." How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, "Ignorance of the law is no excuse." So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizedDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network.
Most beautiful pieces of music in the history of the world brings us into our final segment. I'm Jim Babka, co-hosting with Harry Brown tonight, and let's just go back over what we've covered here tonight. You know, first in the first hour, we spent the most of the time talking about the Patriot Act. This is our last and best chance. The Patriot Act, Congress is coming back December 12th, and the pressure is on to come to a deal, to get a resolution here and to pass this bill that will extend 16 provisions of the Patriot Act and add additional provisions. And this, the Patriot Act, folks, to sum it up, basically means that the constitutional protections that you had against unreasonable search and seizure are basically gone. And all of your private records can be gone through just on mere suspicion, or perhaps you're engaging in First Amendment activity the administration doesn't approve of. And let me add this side point. If you, for some reason, are listening and you're a fan of the Bush administration, you think that Republicans are better for this country and that they do a better job of protecting you and your liberty, let me just remind you that someday you could have a President Hillary Clinton, and she will have these same powers. We really need to do what we can to stop this. The Democrats smell blood in the water. This is the time. Right now, go to downsizedc.org. It's simple and easy to send a message simultaneously to both your representative and both your senators, and you can do that at downsizedc.org. Stop the Patriot Act. It's about halfway down the page. You'll see the picture of Lady Liberty gagged there. That's downsizedc.org to take action to stop the Patriot Act from being passed. And Harry, we also talked tonight about whether or not there really was a war on terror, and you boldly claim that there was not. And there are two articles that you want to point people to. One is Slipped His Moorings by Charlie Reese at lewrockwell.com. Now, folks, you just go to lewrockwell.com, and you just look up Charlie Reese. They have an author section there. You can go look up Charlie Reese, and you can get this column, Slipped His Moorings. A very short and interesting column. Now, the longer column is written by Tom Engelhart. You want to look up Engelhart, Tom Engelhart, Bush's Deadly Dance with Islamic Theocrats, also at lewrockwell.com, and the Robert Dreyfus piece is included as part of that piece. But, Harry, there really is no war on terror, is there? It's a lie.
No, it's the war on straw men, and it's being run by a bunch of Mickey Mouses with brooms trying to stop the flood. And they'll never stop the flood, and I don't know that they really care whether they ever will, but we care, and that's why we have to continually find out what's going on. We have to continually pay attention to what they're doing, and we have to continually look for information such as you'll get on lewrockwell.com about all these different groups, not because you need to know them and be able to rattle them off on your fingers, but simply to understand how ignorant the Bush administration is. Well, we're going to be back next week, and maybe we'll have happier things to talk about. We'll see, but I just do want to see you back here next week at the Libertarian Conversation. This is Harry Brown. Thanks so much, Jim, for joining me tonight, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being there. We'll be back next week. Good night.